All right, everyone, hello. Welcome to section two. So this is going to be a walkthrough for our first project called Mobile Local. So here we're just going to discuss some of the topics more specific to this project, namely JSONP and YQL, or YQL, or however it's pronounced. And then I'll take plenty of time for questions if you've hit some stumbling blocks as you've begun the first project. So just some announcements. Don't forget, all the lecture videos are recorded and available at the course website /lectures. Section schedule, constantly updated, is at the course website /sections. And at that sections page, you'll also find all the videos, source code, and slides from sections, including this walkthrough, once they're available. So today, we're going to talk about basic page setup, the elements you're going to want to have on your page. Then JSONP, what it is, why we need it. YQL, what it is, why we need it. And then some other tips and tricks that will help you along with the project. So just a reminder, I do have a nice little feedback page on my website. So if you'd like to give me some feedback, like, Tommy, you talk way too fast, do let me know, and I'll try to improve as my sections go along. So first, let's talk about setup. So with Mobile Local, we can pretty much do this whole thing using a single HTML page. If you're using a framework and you want multiple pages or, you know, divs on the same HTML file, that's totally fine. Or if you want to do it with multiple HTML pages, that's fine. But just know that it can be done with a single page. So if you find yourself lost on what to put on what page, we just need really one HTML file, and literally everything can be contained within that HTML file. So some things you need in our HTML file. First is our doc type, our HTML5 doc type. Next, I highly recommend you use jQuery, and so we're going to link to the jQuery script. As I mentioned before, it's good to use a CDN-hosted copy because that will usually be cached by the user's browser, so you won't have to worry about downloading a fresh copy from the people.fas server. And don't forget about the meta tags for a viewport and setting all of your device widths and stuff like that correctly. So some other things we're going to need on the page. We're going to need a text box so that users can enter in their location. And so that's the HTML input tag. You can say input type equals text, give it an ID or whatever. And that's where the user is going to enter in their city, state, zip code, and all that information. You're also going to need some kind of submit button. So if you're using an HTML form, you can say input type equals submit. That will be a submit button. Or you can just use the button tag. And that will also be a button that you can register event handlers with. You're also going to need some area on the page where you can put your news. Because we're using a single HTML file, we can just dynamically update the DOM in that HTML file. And so basically, we need a div or some other kind of container tag where we can put the news once we load it. Finally, we also need some way for the user to geolocate, choose to just have the application geolocate them. So whether that be a button or something like that, that they can click and it'll be automatically geolocated. And then some kind of way of implementing the history. So you could have a dropdown, you could have an autocomplete in the search bar. It's really up to you how you want to implement recent history, but just know that that has to be on the page as well. So before we start trying to develop our application logic, let's just make sure that our whole setup is good to go. So we want to just create the skeleton HTML file, make sure all of our elements actually show up on the page, we can click them. And finally, something that I always do whenever I'm creating a new page is make sure that I'm linking to jQuery correctly. So this is pretty simple. The dollar sign function will only work if jQuery is loaded correctly. I mean, that's because the dollar sign is a function defined by jQuery. So if it's not loaded correctly, you're going to get some error if you try to use the function. So here we can just attach an event handler to the page load. So this event ready is going to fire when the DOM is all parsed and we're all good to go. So if we just make the page do something for this event, we're going to know that, OK, jQuery is set up. We know that any problems you run into aren't going to be because of jQuery not being set up correctly. So here I have an example of what that setup page is going to look like. So we just view this. So I'll zoom in for you. So here we have our doc type, and then we have our script tag, where you'll notice I'm linking to Google's server, where they're hosting jQuery so kindly for us. We're using the latest version, which is 1.5.0. And then here's just a simple, the document's ready, so we're just going to show a pop-up that says it works. And then down here, I have those two elements I mentioned, a text box for the user to type something in, and a submit button. So if we view this page, so we just go to the setup page, and then we get a pop-up that says it works. Is there a question?
Yeah, you didn't link the that jQuery code. You didn't link it in. You just had it right there on the page. Is there a reason that you put it in the head versus the body?
Yeah. So. So where you put the JavaScript in the page actually determines when it's executed. So any JavaScript in the head of the page is going to be executed before the DOM is parsed. So like before anything in the body gets loaded, the JavaScript in the head will be executed first. Then all the script tags are going to be executed in the order they appear. So if you have JavaScript at the end of the body tag, that's going to be the last thing that's parsed when the browser is going through and parsing the DOM. So the reason I have it in the head is so that I can register this event handler immediately, which says that, OK, once the page is done loading, then we're going to fire this alert box. So I could have also linked to an external JavaScript file. I just kept it all in one file just for simplicity's sake. Yeah?
Why is that better than an onload action?
So jQuery, the jQuery differences between ready and onload are extremely subtle. For all practical purposes, they're pretty much the same thing. It just has to do with the definition of the DOM being loaded. So there's a difference between ready for manipulation and loaded, according to the really smart people who wrote jQuery. But they're effectively the same thing. The ready function is best practice with jQuery. Any other questions? OK. So if we're using this thing called JSONP, we should be aware that the JSON in JSONP stands for something. And so that is JavaScript Object Notation. And so this isn't something that's just particular to JavaScript. It's actually language independent. It's a data interchange standard just like XML. RFC 4627, if you want to read the whole specification. So it's just like XML, and it's a way to transmit data between a client or a server, regardless of programming language, such that these two applications can communicate. So JSON's much more human-readable and less verbose than XML. And so this is some JSON syntax. So as you'll notice, it's identical to the syntax for declaring a JavaScript object, which is why it's called JavaScript Object Notation. So here, these opening braces say I'm going to declare a new object. So your JSON has to be encapsulated in a single object. So inside of this object, I have another object called car. And so I've described these three properties of my car. It has a color, which is a string value. It has miles, which is an integer value. And then it has an array value. So this is much nicer than an XML, which would have been like three times the characters to do the same thing. So now we can create and parse JSON using our WebKit browser. So we have two functions built in, JSON parse and JSON stringify. So the first is going to take a string of JSON, and it's going to return a JavaScript object. So if this were stored in some string variable, as it will be if the server sends us some JSON, if we call parse on that string, then we have a JavaScript object that we can access just like any JavaScript hash table or object. If you want to go the other way around and convert from an object to a string of JSON, we just call the function stringify, which is excellently named, on some object, and it's going to return a string, the string JSON representation of that object that we can parse later if we want to. So let's take a look at an example of what that looks like. So here we go. So here I'm just creating a variable called JSON string. That's just the content of that slide. So I've defined some properties of my object. And now I'm calling JSON parse on this string. So now this JSON object is a JavaScript object with the property car.color or whatever. So I can treat it just like it were any other JavaScript object. So I can print out the color of the car. I can iterate through the owners of the car and print them out. Now if I want to convert back to a string of JSON, I can call it stringify on that object. And now when I print this out, it's going to be a JavaScript object. So we can take a look at what that looks like. So here I'm just using the Chrome Developer Console. Control-Shift-J, it'll open up a little JavaScript console. If you call console.log, it'll print statements to this debugging console, if you didn't know. So here, it printed red, then it printed the two owners of the car, and then here, our object is converted back into JSON with the stringify method. So any questions on what the JSON in JSONP is? Oh yeah, Firefox also has a JavaScript console. It's also, if you go to tools JavaScript console or something, and Safari does too. Firebug is also really helpful, which is available for I think all the major browsers. That will also have a nice little console that you can look at. Yeah.
What's the difference between JSON and JSONP?
So that's what we're going to get to next. Any other questions? Sure.
So the JSON function is
The latest versions of Firefox also have a native JSON parser. I believe Gecko 1.9 introduced it, but it could be earlier. But it will work on Firefox too. Okay. All right, so now we know what our JSON is, and now we're ready to start the project. So if we remember last week's section, we know that AJAX allows us to make requests to any other page from JavaScript. All right, so let's just make an AJAX request to Google News. So here's our file. We're going to make this AJAX request. So notice I'm just using the jQuery get, which is shorthand for an AJAX get request. Here's my URL, news.google.com. And then I'm just going to alert the response, so show a pop-up with whatever the server said. So let's check this page out. So we click on get. Oh, nothing happened. And we go down here. And that doesn't look so good. So we get this really cryptic-looking error message. Basically, what this boils down to is the JavaScript same origin policy. And as you might have read about, this is a security feature of JavaScript. It basically says if you are on one domain, in this case, my website, you cannot AJAX request content from another domain, in this case, news.google.com. So that error message basically says that you're not allowed to change origins like that, and I'm not going to let this request complete. So JSONP is the solution to this problem. So the P in JSON stands for padding. And that's because the server is going to give us some JSON, but it's also going to give us some data around it, or the padding. So as you might have noticed, we can use the script tag to load content from other domains, right? I'm using the script tag to load the jQuery libraries from the Google domain. So instead of using the traditional XML HTTP request object to make a request to a page, we're actually going to make a request using a script tag that we're going to insert into the DOM when we want to make our request. So the source attribute, so the SRC, is going to be equal to the URL that we're making a request to. So in this case, we'd want to set the URL to news.google.com or something. So the server needs to also cooperate in order for JSONP to work. You know, we can't just use JSONP on any domain and have it magically work. So the server also has to wrap its response in a JavaScript function. So let's say that we have this server that's going to respond with JSONP. So we're going to tell that server, hey, we'd like you to wrap your response in a function called callback or something like that. Now, we have defined the function callback somewhere in our page. So when we load this script tag, the result is going to say callback and then in parentheses and then whatever the data sent. So when that's loaded by the page, our callback function is going to be called, and we've effectively loaded data from another domain. So that's really complicated, and I agree it's really complicated. And that's why we use something like jQuery, which does all of this for us. So if we just use this getJSON function, our request to another domain is going to look exactly like any other AJAX request to our domain. So it takes the same two arguments as the get function we looked at earlier, the first being the URL, which, as I said, can be something on another domain. And the second argument is the callback, so basically the function we're going to call once we receive that data. So now this is where YQL comes in. So YQL is a service by Yahoo that allows you to query web pages with a SQL-like language. So it's basically you have this virtual database, and it contains the internet, and you can query it as if you were working with a regular SQL database. Interesting concept. So the format of the YQL queries we're going to be using is select star. So this is where your columns would be, but because we don't really know what the columns are, let's just grab everything. From some format. And so in this case, we're going to be looking at the RSS and JSON formats. And finally, our where clause is just going to be where the URL equals some URL. So we can check out the YQL console. So here, this is pretty cool. In addition to what we're going to be doing, you can also see they have some built-in stuff for things like maps and music, weather, interestingly. Which is pretty cool. And so, okay, so that's great, because YQL is still on another domain. In this case, it's on developer.yahoo.com. So, I mean, that doesn't really help us too much. However, if you'll notice on the YQL console, we have these two buttons, XML and JSON. If we click on this JSON, we get this nice little text box that says CB Funk. which of course stands for callback function, which is exactly what we're looking for if we're going to be using JSONP. So basically, the bottom line is that YQL can output data as JSONP. It's a server that's going to cooperate with us, so we can call this from any domain we want. So now we can put these two things together. So we know that with YQL, we can query any page, and we can output the data as JSONP. So the problem set gives you this example YQL query. So we're going to type into this console, select star from RSS, where the URL is that. So we can say select star from RSS, where URL equals news.google.com/news, geo equals 02138. And I forgot something. Oh, and output equals RSS, sorry. And output equals RSS. Aha, okay. So now, this is the results of our YQL query. So notice that this is JSONP. In this case, we've wrapped it in a function called cbfunc. Don't worry about what that's called for now. But you can see that we have some JSON, and here are our news results. So we have a news article represented as an object. That object has properties called title, link, publication, pub date for the description for the date it was published. It has a description. And so this is represented as a JSON array. Yeah?
When you do the select star, you only got 10 back? Is that just a limitation of YQL, or is that a flag somewhere?
So I believe with Google things, you can just say and num equals something else. Yeah. So you can just say and num equals 20. That's just like any like Google search URL, that'll work. So if you want more results, you can just add that to your query. Any other questions on YQL so far? Yeah?
How do they handle spaces within the geo parameter? If you put a space in front of the zero, I think it will fail.
Let's see.
Yeah,
so we do need to encode it correctly, and we'll go over how to make sure that there's none of that spaces there. But if you are getting spaces somewhere, you could always there's a JavaScript function that allows you to replace characters and strings. So basically, you could replace every spaces with nothing, and then that'll strip the spaces from the string.
What if you had that would be fine if you wanted to. What if you had San Francisco and strip the space out of that?
So that'll be a different kind of query because we need to get a zip code somewhere, and so we'll take a look at how to get location names from zip codes next.
Space is intrinsically part of the data.
Oh yes, yeah.
San
yes.
Space, Francisco.
Yes, that is yeah. Those are different things.
So his question is then, what do you do with the space? The space is not extraneous; it's part of the data.
Right. So we need to do something called URI encoding. So basically, in our URL, there are special characters for representing things like apostrophes and spaces. And there's a JavaScript function we can call on a string that will automatically replace all of those spaces with things that we can use on YQL, which we'll take a look at later. Other questions? Okay. So at the bottom of our YQL page, where we've just put this query, we have this really long URL. And so basically, this is the URL that we're going to use in our call to get JSON. So you'll notice that YQL automatically wraps it in something called cbfunc. So when jQuery uses the getJSON method, it's actually going to take care of the whole callback thing for you. So in that URL, if you could just delete that and callback equals cbfunc part, it'll work because jQuery is going to say, OK, I don't see anything called callback, so I'm going to generate an appropriate callback and tell the server that I want that. So in your project, if you're looking at that long URL, you can just delete the ampersand callback part.
It won't work if you don't?
No, it shouldn't. There's a way you can specify the name of the callback, which you could do, just to make it match whatever that was. But if you delete it, then you let jQuery generate a unique one for you. So let's take a look at how we can do that. So here's our YQL page. So here I have some URL. It's just a string, and it's equal to that really long URL. that we just looked at, and you notice that it does not end and end callback equals something. So here I'm calling getJSON on that URL, and again we're just going to try to use a pop-up to show a response from the server. So when we load this page, we have a response from the server, and great success. We have single-handedly taken down the JavaScript same origin policy. So this same concept can be applied to that Google geocoding API. So that's going to output JSON. Oh, question?
Sorry, yeah. From the previous slide, you had the diagnostic as true in the URL.
Mm-hmm.
Is that important?
No, that's not. That'll just give you some information about like how long the query took and when you submitted it. You can remove that and nothing bad will happen. I just left it in there. Oh, the question was the URL has this diagnostic equals true, which is right here. And that's just put in there by YQL by default. You can feel free to remove it, and it should still work OK. Other questions? Yeah?
How did you enable the debugging information?
Oh, that was all YQL by default. Oh, how do I enable diagnostic information? So there's this checkbox. Yeah, so there's this little checkbox called diagnostics. If I uncheck it, then that will disappear from the URL. It will no longer say diagnostics equals true. It is kind of helpful because you get information from YQL or in the browser? Oh, so that is the JavaScript console. So I hit Control-Shift-J. On a Mac, it might be something else, but you can hit the little wrench, go to Tools, and then JavaScript console. And something similar should be available on other browsers. If you want to download something like Firebug or other debuggers, they should be on any browser. Other questions? Yeah?
I was wondering about this getJSON function, because it worked for me when I put it like inside the body tags, but when I put it inside another function, it would be called then.
So JSONP basically makes an AJAX request just like any other of the AJAX functions. So it should work wherever you put it in the page. I would recommend putting all that logic inside of the document.ready function, just so you can make sure that anything isn't called prematurely. That could have been the issue you were having. But you should be able to call it from other functions or for anyone else, no problem. That could also be the issue if you had that callback thing somewhere. If you don't have anything with a callback in the URL, jQuery is going to generate a unique function name so you don't like mix up callbacks with multiple calls. Right? So if you had two get JSON requests and they both had the same callback URL, the same function will be called, which is kind of like a mess up. So if you just remove anything with the word callback anywhere from the URL, jQuery is going to handle it for you. So that could have been your issue.
Okay, so from that URL, I should remove that.
Yeah, so you can remove the ampersand callback equals whatever it was. You can just remove it. That's what I'm doing on my page here. There's no callback or anything. Nothing in the call to get JSON, no callbacks. It's all going to be handled automatically.
So you could
you
just take that function name with response as a parameter.
So if you wanted to do that, you would say like a function f, and it would take a response, and then it would alert the response, and then you would just say f. So that's the syntax there. No, so this is just JavaScript syntax of passing a function as an argument. It will automatically pass the variables to this when it's called.
Okay.
So if we just want to verify that this works, hopefully it does. Yeah, so it still works with our new separate function. Yep?
Is response kind of a reserved word, or can you put foobar there?
Nope, you can put anything. So that's just, it's going to populate that argument with the response. Oh, sorry. I keep forgetting to do that. So the question was, that response like a reserved keyword? Does it have to say response? The answer is no. You can make that argument whatever you want. So if I wanted to call it R, then I could just alert R, send this back to the server, reload the page, and it still works. So as long as you're using the argument as whatever you named it in the function, you should be good to go. Other questions? Okay. So we could also use this for the geocoding API, which is going to output JSON. So before, you'll notice in our Google News URL, we had this parameter at the end that was ?, equals RSS. And so RSS is basically an XML-based thing, and it basically tells Google News API what format to output the data in. The geocoding API is not going to use RSS, but it's going to use JSON, which is nice because we just took a look at JSON. So instead of saying select star from RSS, we want to say select star from JSON, where the URL equals this thing, which we got from the problem set and from reading the documentation on the geocoding API. So if we want to take a look at what this is going to spit out, And it doesn't like the carriage returns. Okay. So here, instead of using the Google News URL, I'm now using the geocoding API. I've given it some address, which just happens to be the address of my dorm. And so here we get back some information, like the street number, county, and here's our postal code, latitude and longitude, and some other pertinent information about that location. So it also works the other way around. If we want to give it a latitude and longitude, so instead of using this address parameter in the URL, we're going to use latlang, so latlng, and we're going to give it a pair of coordinates. So if we put this into the YQL console, removing carriage returns. So same thing, we got the same results. There's my dorm again, and this time we queried it via a latitude and longitude, and we got back zip code and all the other information that we need. So any questions on YQL with the geocoding? Yep?
Isn't Google already returning the geocoding information in JSON format? In which case, why are we going to YQL for that?
So they're returning it in JSON, but not JSONP. So the question was, why are we going through this YQL thing if Google's already given us JSON? And the problem is that it's giving us just pure JSON. It's not going to wrap it in this callback function. And so we need to use YQL to circumvent the same origin policy again.
And you're getting an address down there, sorry, a URL down there that's specific to these particular coordinates.
Yes. So most of the address is not specific to these coordinates. If we take a look at it, the bulk of it is just our query. And the only thing that's going to change in our query is going to be these two coordinates. So we can build this string once we have those coordinates.
Okay. I'm getting an odd error with my geocoding where it says that I need a new key. It keeps trying to generate something weird like that. Do you know anything about that? Is that related to...
So I'm doing this without making any API key, anything with an API key or anything like that. I'm not entirely sure what that would be.
If you want to display a map, I think Google requests that you get a key. But you could get a key for local published. You get a key per domain.
Yeah, I tried that. Like, no matter what I put in, I get the same problem.
Are you trying to display a map?
So if you want to come to office hours, we can take a look at your code specifically. But yeah, I'm not using any kind of API key or anything like that. I'm just flat calling this from YQL. I didn't do anything.
I think that might be an older version of geocoding. Is that something about the newer geocoding not
Yeah, so if you want to take a look at the URL here, it's also in the slides, which will be posted. Just make sure that those URLs match, because that could be the issue. So the different version will have a different URL. Other questions?
I'm confused.
Sure.
We took off in the URL log, we removed callback function.
Yes. So it is what makes it a JSONP. However, when we call getJSON for us, so we're calling getJSON in some URL. The first thing jQuery does is it takes a look at the URL and it says, is there a parameter here called callback? If there isn't, I'm going to make one. So if we don't specify this callback, we're telling jQuery, okay, make your own callback, please, and it'll be some long string of numbers to make sure that it's unique. Yep? Yes, you can also do that. That's the same exact thing, just a jQuery syntax thing. Oh, sorry. You can also, the question was, can you also say and callback equals question mark? Yes, you can do that. It's equivalent to not having anything in the callback at all. And so to recap for the camera, the questions were what happened to the callback function? So if we don't include it, jQuery is going to generate a unique callback function for us. And if we have ampersand callback equals question mark, jQuery is still going to generate a unique callback function for us. And that's going to send that over to YQL. YQL is going to know what to wrap it in. We're going to get it back, and we're going to behave as expected. Other questions? Oh, that's, I don't remember what that does, actually. If you remove it, it should still work.
It's a mobile device.
Oh, it doesn't. So I guess it's just one of those things that needs to be defined. I could maybe attempt to do something with a GPS or... Do you know... Your question?
Can you go over RAM encoding?
Yes, we're going to go over that. So the previous question was, what is this sensor equals true thing? It's just something you have to define in order for your API calls to work. It does the same thing whether or not it's true or false. It does something. I just don't quite, I don't know off the top of my head what it does. If you read the API documentation, it'll certainly tell you. Okay. So let's go back. So when we call JSONP, the response coming back is guaranteed to be JSON. So you'll notice that we're actually not calling that JSON parse function we saw earlier, and that we're just using the data. That's because jQuery is automatically calling its own parse JSON function for us. So if you're using jQuery's getJSON, you do not have to call JSON.parse on whatever you get back. It's already going to be a JavaScript object for you. If you're not using jQuery, then you do need to call this JSON parse to convert your string to an object. So let's take a look at handling the response we get from a YQL page. So same deal here. We have this long URL. We're back to using Google News. So our format is JSON. Our output is RSS. So we're calling getJSON, and now we're calling this console.log function on the response. So this is going to output that object to our debugging console. And then we just have a pop-up that's addressing our response object like any other JavaScript object, where we can say .query.count. So where this .query.count thing came from is what we can see when we use the JavaScript console. So we go back, and we're going to load response. So here we just alerted 10, which is the number of results. So now if we look down here at the debugging console, you'll notice that we console.log our entire response. So it actually doesn't output the string object. We can actually look at all the properties of this object. So here we can say response.query.count, and then down here we have another object, and here are all of our results as an array. So we can check out all of the keys we need to use when we're trying to access our results. So to do this, I just called console.log on the entire response. And so now we can check it out using the developer console, the JavaScript debugging console. We can also just take a look at it from the YQL console. And these things, you'll notice, match. We have a query. Inside of the query, we have a count. And then we have all those other keys. Yep?
So I could reference a particular news article by doing like response.item, open close bracket 3.
Yep. Yeah. And then you could, so the question was, can you use the array notation to access these this array of items? And the answer is yes. You can iterate over it using a for loop, and you can use numerical indices if it's an array. So the way you can tell if it's an array or an object is the type of brackets or braces that are being used. So in this case, results is going to be an array because we're opening up the square bracket, but each element of results is an object because we're opening up this brace. Yep?
Somewhere in the readings, I saw a constructor for an object named array. Is that a different thing than just an array constructor?
So the question was, there's also a constructor for an array object. And basically, that constructor is just a wrapper for these square brackets. It's just like a syntactic sugar or shorthand notation. But array is a JavaScript class built into it. And you could use that array class as if it were a class in any other language. But so this is just shorthand and much preferred because it's fewer things to read. Are there questions? Cool. So now, some just tips and tricks you might find handy as you're going through the project. So jQuery is a humongous library, but its API is extremely well documented at api.jquery.com. But here are some functions that you might find useful for this particular project. So there's the val function, which is going to get the value of an input element. So we're going to give it a selector. So that could be an ID, a class, the input tag. And if we call val on that, it's going to return the value of that tag, so what the user typed into it. If we give that a parameter, it's going to set the value of that tag, so we can change the text that's contained in that input tag from this function. The HTML function is similar, except it's used to get and set the HTML contained within your selected elements. So if you had some paragraph tag, like a p tag, and you called HTML on it, it would just return whatever was contained within that tag. If you have tags contained within that tags, they'll just be returned inside of the string as tags. If you want to set the HTML inside of an element, you can just give that HTML function an argument. So that'll be a string of containing HTML tags or just text. And that will change the HTML inside of those elements to be whatever you told it to be.
Question?
Sure.
Was your selector for the paragraph example one particular P, or is that going to bring back all the P's?
So the question was my example of just the letter P as my selector, will that be just the first P or all the P's? The answer is all of the P's. So if you wanted to just change a particular paragraph, you'd have to give it an ID, or you could also use the nth child, and that'll select the first, second, or third, or whatever paragraph on the page. On the previous section, the slides have a list of handy selectors you can use. But if you just give it a tag, it will select all of the tags. If you just give it a class, it will select everything with that class.
So are all those contents just concatenated, or what's the nature of getting several P's in a row?
So are all those contents just concatenated? Off the top of my head, I don't remember. It's either an array of all of them, or they're concatenated. It's one of the two. I don't remember off the top of my head, but you can certainly either read the documentation or check it out. These are getting the values of things are more suited for single elements, but something will happen if you use it on multiple elements. I just don't know off the top of my head. Yep?
Is there a difference between this and doc using dollar each?
So is there a difference between this and dollar each? So dollar each is designed to iterate through a bunch of elements. So JavaScript, we say this for in loop, right? The each function is basically the same thing, except it allows us to iterate through a set of elements. So if I had a selector here, and I selected, let's go with the paragraph tag again. So if I just selected P, and then I called each. So the argument to each is just going to be a single function, and that's going to define what we do with each element. So if I wanted to work with all the paragraphs separately, I could select all the paragraphs, call each, and then that would iterate through all the paragraphs that I selected. Sure.
Just clarify that syntax a little bit. Is each a function of an object returned from the dollar function? or is it a dollar each function with some argument?
So the question is that each function, is it going to be a dot each after a selector, or is it just its own function? The answer is both. If you call dot each after a selector, then that's going to work. If you just say dollar sign dot each, your first argument is going to be what you're iterating over, and your second argument is going to be that callback. So both will work fine. Stylistically, same thing. Any other questions? Okay, so just back to the bind function. And so this is going to be used to register event handlers, so like a button press or a geolocation button press. We can bind an event. So the first argument is going to be the event type, like click or onTouch start or whatever you want to use. The second argument is going to be the callback function, so what function gets called when this event happens. So if the selector contains, this selector applies to more than one element, so if we're just using that paragraph selector again, it's going to bind the event on all of those elements separately. And finally, we have the append function, which is appending some content as a string to the selected elements. So again, if multiple elements are selected, it's going to append to all of them. And so we have this append function, which is going to append the content inside of the selected elements. So if I append to a paragraph tag, what I append will be inside of those p tags. If I want it outside of those p tags, I'm going to use the after function. There's also a prepend function, which will add something to the beginning of the selected element or elements, and the before function, which will add them outside of the tags before that. So questions on... Yep?
I'm not very familiar with the events. Is that a set of reserved words or something like that, or do you name them yourselves? How does that work?
So the question is, how do these events work? Are they reserved words, or can you just create them? They are reserved words. You can Google a list of JavaScript events. The ones that we'll be concerned with are something like click or submit, which we'll look at on the next slide. I also gave a list of mobile-specific DOM events in the last section slides, which include onTouch start, onTouch end, gesture change, and some other stuff relating to touching a screen. So the question was trying to dynamically add elements to a jQuery mobile page. I believe jQuery mobile in the API, it defines functions that will allow you to manipulate things on the page. If you want to browse through the documentation, there should be functions that will define that behavior for you if it breaks using the traditional methods. jQtouch, I know, does not do that. If you append, if you're using jQtouch and you just call append, it'll be styled correctly. jQuery Mobile, the API documentation should explain that for you. If I can talk to you afterwards, or you can come to office hours and we can take a look at it. Yep.
Can we expect everything in JavaScript on a desktop browser to work pretty much the same way on mobile?
So the question was, can we expect everything, all the JavaScript on a desktop browser to behave the same way on the mobile browser? And the answer to that is yes, if you're using the same layout engine. So if you're using a WebKit browser, which is Safari and Chrome, that's also used for the Safari on your iPhone and the web browser on your Android. If you're using IE, probably not. So if you're using the equivalent desktop version, then all behavior should work as expected. But you can verify that in a simulator or an actual device.
The project is not required to work on IE.
No, absolutely not. Nothing should be. Oh, sorry. The question was, nothing should be required. That was the answer. The question was, is the project required to work on Internet Explorer? No, nothing should be. It shouldn't even exist. So finally, some useful JavaScript functions. Oh, sorry, question?
I actually have a question on the previous slide.
Sure.
Can you use these selector functions on the JSON response?
So the question was, can we use these selectors on a JSON response just like we can other elements of the page? I believe the answer is no, only because a JSON response is effectively going to be a JavaScript object at that point. These do work on XML responses, which is actually what RSS is. So if you want to output as XML, they'll work. The project might require you to use JSON, though. But the short answer is it's probably easier to just address them as if they were JavaScript objects. So if you have something like a key in your JSON, you can just address that directly with, you know, dot the key name or the brackets, the key name. I don't think it works, though I'm not 100%. I'm pretty sure it doesn't, though. Okay, so some useful JavaScript functions. So as I mentioned before, the encode URI component. So this basically is going to replace special characters in some string so they can be used in a URL. So you'll notice on my YQL URL thing, I have all of these random percent sign and then numbers, or percent sign it's and some hexadecimal code. So this is the result of calling encode URI component on the URL. So we're just going to replace spaces with this %20. We're going to replace the equal sign with %3d. So if you call encode URI component on a string, it's going to return a string in which all the special characters have been substituted for their hexadecimal equivalents. Yep?
I noticed that in some cases, URL encoding replaces spaces with plus signs. Are they interchangeable, or is, you know, %20 the correct syntax?
So the question was, sometimes encode URI component might use plus signs. That should be fine. In my experience, that should be that should be perfectly fine. They should be equivalent. Other questions? Okay. And so, just a note. Question.
Isn't there a JavaScript function called encode URI?
Maybe there could be. Yeah. So there's a question. Is there another function? Does the function have a different name? It might. You can certainly Google around for that. But anything with encoding a URI is going to do what we need it to do for the purpose of this project.
My understanding was that encode URI encodes everything but the query string, and that encodes the query string. But there are two different functions.
Okay, so the question was there are two different functions. Certainly, play around with whichever one is going to do what you need it to do for the purposes of this problem set. If one doesn't work, try the other one, I guess. Other questions? Yep?
From a project spec, it's not clear to me if you need to enter the zip code and the city state into the same field, or if you can offer the user two different.
So the question was, do the city state and the zip code need to be handled in the same box? If that's vague on the problem set, feel free to. So the spec says you need to offer the user a form. So if it doesn't specify, feel free to have two text boxes. You can certainly do it using just one text box. But if you'd like to have two different ones and the problem set specification doesn't say otherwise, then do feel free. Whichever you think is a better design, or which you prefer. Other questions? So just one final quick note, that the plus is used for string concatenation in JavaScript. So if you're concatenating something like a zip code to something like a URL, you could just use the plus sign. If you're trying to concatenate an integer to a string, that integer will automatically be converted to a string for you. So you don't have to worry about that. So any last questions on anything on the project in general? Sure.
Going back to the JSONP thing,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned that the reason for having that is the same origin policy, right? Basically, that you're not allowed to do cross-site scripting. But my question is, JSONP, in essence, still does that, right? You are calling that function from within a function in your JavaScript. The jQuery function, how does jQuery get around that?
So the question was, if the same origin policy is designed to prevent C-surf attacks, you know, how does jQuery do that? And so jQuery is doing what we described earlier, that long method of dynamically inserting a script tag into the DOM, then using that script tag to load outside content, and then calling that callback function for us.
So you're saying when a new script tag is inserted, it will automatically be executed, and then there will be something left from that, some results of that execution, right?
Yeah. So the question was, will that script tag be executed, and then we'll have some result? And yeah, so jQuery is going to handle all of that for us. So there are office hours and 53 Church Street Mac Lab if you'd like to stop by with questions specific to your code or your project. But if not, then that's all I have for you. Good luck with the project.